And welcome back to the Gospel Sports Truth Podcast. I am your host, Zay, the Fantasy Football Feed, and I have my guy, BK Wins, in the house. Holla at the people, BK.
Hey, y'all.
So, yeah, there's a lot going on. I know we just have Super Bowl, and so we're in NFL and NCAA football purgatory for a few months here. But there are several things to discuss, and will be several more. There's some baseball stuff to go over. We have a little bit of top five of something that I'm sure you're going to enjoy, but we'll definitely deep dive into several topics that we hope will be of entertainment value to you. With that being said, let's go ahead and start it out with the good word of the week, BK. What we got?
Sure, of course. So, you know, we're a few days past the Super Bowl, where the Eagles absolutely dominated the Chiefs, ending their three-peat hopes. Were you more surprised by the Eagles' near flawless performance or the dreadful struggles of the Chiefs?
Well, BK, I'll definitely say I was a little bit more surprised by the struggles of the Chiefs, because the Eagles had been kind of doing their thing and looking really good doing it several weeks leading up to the Super Bowl. But call me a conspiracy theorist, but you play the worst game of the year, maybe the worst game of the last couple of years, and it's right after everyone was essentially calling attention to how much help you get from the refs. And in this game, it didn't seem like you got any help at all from the refs. It almost seemed like they went the exact opposite of making it seem like they were even calling it. It almost seemed like the refs leaned towards the Eagles just like. But I say all that to say, when everyone was watching for the refs to get caught doing dirt is when you played the worst, and that doesn't necessarily have the best optics, I'll put it that way. But the Eagles playing good ball, I expected that. Their defense has been stellar, but Kansas City not having any type of an answer, especially with that coach and the resiliency of that quarterback, I didn't see them not being able to make it a game. Like, I don't care who you talk to. I don't care how big of an Eagles fan they are. To say that it wasn't even going to be a game, to say that it was essentially going to be a skunk, and if it was video games, you would have had the right to end it before halftime, because as we gamers know, 21-0 is a skunk. It went down 24-0. The game was over before the game got started. I can't see anyone who's been 100% honest with themselves and with anyone else saying that they saw that being a game.
No, absolutely. So just a few other questions along those lines. So how do the Chiefs recover from their second crushing Super Bowl beatdown? What lessons were learned here? And I guess, what do you think's next for the Chiefs, like moving forward? Because we know they have a really good team, but this is the second time where they got just beat down.
Well, BK, I'll label these as first world problems, because how many teams would love to be able to say, we got beat down twice in the Super Bowl in the last few years. So worse things have happened to better people. I'll put it that way. So I don't know that the Chiefs have to do much at all. Matter of fact, if the exact same thing happened again next year, 30 other teams would be happy about it if they were in that position, just so we're on the same page. So I don't think there's anything to fix. Rashee Rice, one of the best players, didn't even play. Like, most of the year, they still made it here. They had a lot to fix this year. They still made it to the Super Bowl. Like, I'm a Patriots fan, so I understand what happens when you win a whole lot. And the expectation from others supersedes that of the fans of the actual team. If you're asking me what they need to do to be better than being one game shy of winning the Super Bowl, just getting to the Super Bowl and playing better. But 30 other teams to 31 other teams didn't do better. Excuse me, 30 other teams didn't do better. So I don't know that they need to do better. I think it's very telling when it's championship or you suck. Like, who has that pressure on them in any league where, oh, really? You didn't win the championship? What happened to you this year?
I mean, the closest thing I can think of is Saban at Bama.
Yep. Yeah. True. Or the UConn women's team, when Oriema was on that streak, it was, oh, you won all of these and then you didn't win one. Maybe you aren't good at your job anymore. Like, what? Like, what? And that's kind of where I figured, that's the box I feel like they're attempting to put Andy Reid in. It's like, really? Because I didn't three-peat? I now need to figure out whether or not this is still for me? Like, are you serious? Who else was being held to that standard? So I just, this wasn't the year of Kansas City actually being the better team. This is last year was, and they actually won one in a quote unquote retooling year, but then due to injuries and things of that nature, they were still kind of retooling. But on the fly this year, they still have one of the youngest teams in the NFL. I don't know what else you can ask them to do at this point. They almost did something that's never been done in the NFL at all ever, which is a three-peat. So the fact that they had the opportunity to do so, I'm trying to remember whether or not any other team was in position to do it. I can't remember if the Patriots were.
I know that the closest thing that I can think of was the 49ers.
49ers, okay.
In 88 and 89, they won. They went back-to-back. And then in 90, the NFC title game, they got beat by the Giants 15-13.
Okay. So no other team is actually got two Super Bowls and then went to a third.
Correct.
How much better do they need to be? If anything, the NFL fans and other teams should be thanking their lucky stars that there may be some form of kryptonite for Superman at this point.
Yeah, so for me, and I don't disagree with any of that, I was definitely more surprised that the Chiefs struggled than I was about how great the Eagles played. The Eagles have been playing great. I mean, listen, they've lost one game in their last 18 games, counting the postseason. So the team's been winning and winning a lot. It's not a surprise that they played well. And they peaked at the right time. They were terrific throughout the NFC playoffs. So I think for me, what was surprising for the Chiefs is, A, not only did they get shut out at halftime and they were, I mean, just getting crushed. It's 34-0 and 40-6 in the Super Bowl. That's a woof, you know? But the thing that really surprised me was we've seen this game plan before from the Buccaneers in Brady and the other Super Bowl where they got beat down, where you rush for it, you play coverage behind it, and you terrorize Mahomes with just those four without blitzing. And they didn't have an answer for it. And I guess, and there was really no adjustments that you could see during the course of the game to change that up. And, you know, one of the things, you know, like I saw the same thing for 3.5 quarters. And then when the Eagles called off the dogs, they went over the top and hit Worthy for some touchdowns, which, you know, is fine, the cosmetic scores. But, you know, I just think that, and we talked about it in another show, so I try not to repeat an earlier point, but I would have gone max protection. If they're rushing four, I'm going to have six down linemen, which means I have six to block four, so my tackles can get help. I still got Kelsey and two other receivers to run routes, and I have a back back there that can either chip somebody or can go out, run a real route or some, be a safety valve, but I still have people, but it just, there were no adjustments to what was happening. And it's one thing when you're caught off guard because this is the first time you've seen it, but it was literally watching the same game twice and not having an answer. And that is where I can't understand that.
We're on the same page. I mean, it's one thing to have a plan to beat a team, and it's another to actually have the Jimmys and Joes that are capable of pulling out that plan. The Eagles had the perfect storm of both. They had the plan, and they also had the actual bodies on the field that were capable of pulling off the type style of defense necessary to beat this type of team. I don't know if some of the other upper echelon teams in the NFC or AFC, if they attempted to run a similar game plan, if they would have been able to get similar results, because the Jimmy and Joes aren't the same.
The one thing I just wanted to add here, because I don't want people out there to miss out on a key point here, which is, make no mistake, the Chiefs' woes on Super Bowl Sunday was more about how great the Eagles were, not about what the Chiefs didn't do. Let's give credit to the Eagles for an A-plus game plan. They executed the game plan to perfection. The Chiefs took away Barkley. Hurts was under 140 yards halfway through the third quarter, and they were still getting blown out. So the defensive game plan that Vic Fangio had, and the pieces, parts they had between the D-line and then coverage behind it, this was a masterful game plan on both sides of the ball for the Eagles. And I just want to make sure that we give the proper credit for how great they were.
Absolutely. And it's the natural response to attempt to figure out what happened to the hero. But there was no villain in this game. And what the Eagles were able to pull off, in light of going up against an historic team, in light of having a head coach and a quarterback who have continuously, you know, had their names tossed around as those that aren't the upper echelon within their peer group, to be able to take out the champ, the two-time champ. Like, I don't care what Sirianni does going forward. I don't care what Jalen Hurts does going forward. They beat the two-time champ. No one else will be able to say that for quite some time, because you're going to have to get another two-time champ, unless it's the Eagles that wins back-to-back and then somebody takes them out. But the likelihood of a team that is being looked at as being less than by most coming out and just dominating a team that's been considered as being superior to most, I don't know that we'll have this stark of a contrast in what we thought going into a game and what we felt coming out is what we saw in this Super Bowl.
And I think there's one last thing here before we move along that there's one element of this game that reminds me of what happens in the college football playoffs when they had a month before, back in the old days where there was a month to stew. And, you know, for 2 weeks, the Eagles got to hear about how they had no chance to win and the Chiefs were going to three-peat. And they even pointed out, they came out afterwards and said, the talk was all about the three-peat. We took that personally. Yeah, like for 2 weeks, everyone was already anointing the Chiefs as the champions and who was going to be the MVP and how great it was and could they ever be stopped? And the Eagles said, hold my beer, we got you. And you know, it was a college feel to me where, for, you know, they were told they had no chance, don't even bother showing up. And not only did they show up, but they put a beat down on them. And so I think there's an element of the Eagles took that personal and it showed.
Yeah, for sure. Never tell a room full of grown men that they don't stand a chance against a group next door that they're about to compete against. Like, just attempt to not do that at all. It didn't help anybody.
That part.
What we got next, BK?
So we get to talk about the Buckeyes here again, which seems to be a familiar theme. Matt Patricia becomes the Buckeyes' new defensive coordinator. What's your reaction to this? Is this a good fit? You know, you excited about it? Indifferent? How do you feel?
Well, here's the thing. Some people may remember Matt Patricia for how horrible of an OC he was. Some people may remember him for how bad of a head coach he was. He's never been a bad DC. Some of the Patriots' best years were with Matt Patricia at defensive coordinator. So I kind of feel like he's going to be in a perfect position to be able to reposition himself for what he wants to do for his future. But I also feel like the talent on this team and the way the college game comes about, where you have a lot more bodies to be able to play with on your defense, so you can be much more aggressive and not have to worry about players running out of energy, et cetera. And when you're as deep as the Buckeyes are, I really believe we're actually going to see a better defense than what we had with Jim Knowles. If you ask me to compare Jim Knowles to Matt Patricia, I'm sorry. I think Matt, I'll put it to you this way. If he's not better than Jim Knowles, he's as good as him. So I don't see any fall off. I'll put it out there that.
That's fair. Yeah, I think he has a lot more experience than he got to learn under the best defensive mind probably ever in Belichick. So he, you know, I think with all the talent advantages Ohio State has, I think he'll do well there. I think at a minimum, it'll be the same as, if not better, but like you said, worst case, it'll be the same. So, you know, no harm, no foul as far as that goes.
And honestly, DK, if it's equal to, but different, so the people that you played last year have to prepare for you differently this year, then that becomes an advantage. So I feel like our worst case scenario with the Buckeyes defense is it being equal but different. So that's still an advantage. So people don't know what it is to expect until it's too late.
No, agreed. Well, rounding out the good word of the week, we're turning to the diamond where star third baseman Alex Bregman finally got it signed with a new team. 3-year, $120 million to go to Beantown to join the Red Sox. How much does this help the Red Sox? Were you surprised that that was his landing spot? What's your take on that?
Was I surprised it was his landing spot? Absolutely. Highest average salary for a Red Sox player ever at $40 million a year. Now, granted, it's only a 3-year deal, so if it does blow up in their face, it doesn't blow up too much. But he's proven, he's consistent. He's not an all-star player anymore, but he's still better than what they had. His only two all-star years in the pros were 2018 and 2019. That being said, he is a former Silver Slugger and a Golden Glove. 99 career postseason starts. And he'll most likely be playing on second base and batting in the top five. Personally, I like Jaron Duran, Rafael Devers batting first and third, then with Trevor Story and Bergman batting second and fourth. And he's an experienced cleanup hitter, which can be invaluable with bringing in runs. So the fact that they have someone who is a sure glove and more likely than not to be able to bat when it matters the most, and looking at the deficiencies that they had, kind of made sense. Like, is he talented enough to have been the highest paid on average for the Red Sox? Maybe not, but when that's your deficiency, whoever is out there and whatever that ticket is running is kind of what you end up having to do. But yeah, it does somewhat surprise me that this team decided to jump out there. But if they didn't, they were going to be definitely behind the power curve going into the year. So.
Yeah, I think for me, I was surprised. I really thought, because so much time had elapsed in the free agency and we're already getting back to, you know, catchers and pitchers reported and everything, and spring training is getting underway, I would have thought he would have returned to Houston. You know, to go to a team that doesn't really have a chance to compete for a title, like him going there makes Boston maybe the third team in the AL East. So I guess they could squeak into the playoffs. And I know they try to retool their roster, but it's got a lot of holes, even with them there. And I just don't think it's enough. The thing I love for Boston in getting him is it's a shorter deal, so you're only committed to 3 years. Defensively, he's terrific. And he's a clutch hitter in the playoffs. He delivers in the postseason. And so, you know, should the Red Sox get there, he'll definitely be a key reason in the postseason why they're a team to be reckoned with. So it makes sense for Boston. It's a good move for them. I just don't think it's a good move necessarily for the player.
But BK, here's the other part of that. Because they're Boston, and they tend to not be all that great, they're going to be in playoff mode a whole lot sooner than a whole bunch of other teams. He's great when he's in playoff mode. Ergo, there's a huge plus for a team that finds itself in playoff mode a whole lot sooner in the season than most other teams. So again, I'm just saying it kind of fits to what they need. So
you're saying, not wrong. He'll be in playoff mode come May 1st.
Just saying.
Well, looking to the truth, but nothing but the truth. We're going to start with what five NFL teams are poised for a better 2025. Last year, we saw the Broncos dramatically improve. Of course, the Vikings came out of nowhere. They were picked dead last by a lot and were terrific last year at 14-3. Obviously, the Commanders came out of nowhere to have a terrific year, a game away from the Super Bowl. So what are a handful of teams you have your eye on next year that could make a move?
All right. So in no particular order, as far as who I think is going to do the best or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Chicago will be better. They were 5-12 this year. Caleb Williams will be another year into his maturation process, and I believe there'll be a few adults in the room going forward there in Chicago, all of which bodes well, bodes well for that team. Similar situation in New England, who was 4-13. We have a coach who is able to do more with less in most situations. We have a coach that kind of knows what he's getting into from the very beginning versus kind of figuring it out as long as it goes. And the cupboard isn't as bare as it could be. I do believe their quarterback of the future is already in New England. I do believe the money situation with New England being at the very top of the cash list, if you will, as far as money that they can work out to free agents, several players that maybe have played for Vrabel in the past, maybe more than willing to play for him in the future, but several moves that New England made this offseason gave him a little bit more sturdy ground. So some guys that weren't even willing to take the money last year, which it's difficult in the NFL to beg someone to take money if you're going to be like, nah, I'm okay. I'm going to go this direction. I don't think that the guys that they go after and attempt to overpay this year, they'll get them. But I think that it'll probably end up only being like maybe two guys. It'll be a wide receiver and then maybe another player on defense, something like that. Dallas. Dallas was 7-10. If they had simply just been healthy, they would have had a better record than that. I want to say that they're going to be in a position where they really have to silence the noise. I don't know that their current head coach is going to be better than their previous coach. But again, even with their current coaching staff, if they can just keep their players healthy, especially as it pertains to the quarterback, if they bring in a guy as far as running back is concerned, and they need to put someone else out there besides CeeDee Lamb, I don't think they're going to bring back Brandon Cooks. So he will literally not have anyone beside him. They're going to have to do that, which I think they will do, and they'll definitely be better than 7-10. Carolina, 5-12. Most of those five were won toward the latter part of the year where they were going toe-to-toe with just about everyone that they went against. Another year with the head coach having his job and being a little bit more comfortable with what he does, a little bit more time with Bryce Young, doing what he does and being a little bit more comfortable. Another draft that's going to be high enough in the draft that they'll be able to get a couple key players here and there. Lastly, and I don't think this one surprises anyone, which is why I saved them for last, Cincinnati, who went 9-8, again, handling their business in the offseason, and barring injury, they could end up being one of the better teams in the league, but they do have to do a little bit more on defense as well. I don't exactly know how I feel about the DC that they brought in, but we'll see how that goes. Even their offense, though, their offense can keep them in just about any game. They're just going to need their defense to step up just a little bit.
Yeah, no, I think for me, I'm going to copy two of the teams, which would be, you know, Cincinnati and also New England. But the three teams that I'll add, one, the 49ers, they were decimated by injuries. With that roster, it's hard to believe they're going to be worse than last year.
Yeah, for sure.
I think the Broncos are going to be better. They were 10-7. They had a lot of dead cap issues with Russ Wilson leaving. They have a rookie quarterback that took them to the playoffs. He's going to have year two under his belt. Plus, they're going to be able to stockpile some talent on that roster to help him. They already have a top five defense. I like the Broncos to take another step next year as well. So that would be team number four. And then the other team I like is, I know they were 10-7, but I think there can be even better, which would be Seattle. Seattle had a lot of tough luck losses. This could have easily been, and I know ifs and buts and it's results oriented, but they could have easily been 12-5 or 13-4. Mm-hmm. I expect them to be even better next year. So those would be the five teams that I expect to be better next year.
Kubiak going to Seattle, and with the running backs that they have there, implementing that run game could be a game changer for them. I don't know what they're going to do at wide receiver. The scuttlebutt has been that DK Metcalf could be on the road en route to a trade, which Lockett isn't that far from calling it a career. So I don't know if it'll be JSN and whoever they may draft or free agent or whatever, but I do like what they did with their coordinator situation.
Well, subject two, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about the Chiefs' quest for historic three-peat, and it got me thinking they were a game away from doing just that. Will we see a three-peat in this era of NFL football, or do you just think it's too tough and it just won't happen? And if you do think it'll happen, who would be the team?
It'll never happen. And the reason it'll never happen is, unlike any sport, it's very rarely that a team can escape the injury bug from major players for three straight years. And it's also very rarely that a team has the injury bug hit and hit a key player or multiple key players and you still win the Super Bowl. It's just not one of those sports. Basketball, everyone can stay relatively healthy even if they get hurt, as long as they're healthy the time of the year that it matters the most, and you can kind of manage that based on the number of games that they play. In this sport, I just don't see it happening. The most likely sport for it to happen in, I think it'll be baseball, but it's unlikely to happen there too.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't think it'll happen either. And the reason why is a few reasons. One, in a salary cap era, it's really hard to be able to keep together a roster like that. Your better players are going to get paid, and when they get paid, you can't pay everybody, so you lose talent that way. You get forced into decisions. The second part of it is, as you mentioned, health, right? You have to get lucky, and your key players have to be healthy and stay healthy, and that's a hard thing to do. Everything has to go right. And then I think the third part of it is, it's stacked against you. When you win, you pick bottom of the first round. You know, you're the last pick.
You have one of the toughest schedules.
You play a first place schedule, so you're playing the toughest schedule, picking last. you played the longest. So I know you had a bunch of time off, but you played the longest, so you have less time to prepare because these other teams have already started their offseason prep. Well, you're celebrating a title. So all of it is geared.
And DK, one other thing to add to the list.
Mm-hmm.
You normally have your coordinators poach.
Yep. Yeah. And we already saw them lose one.
And but some will say is their most important one, the offensive coordinator. So when you win, people want to be associated with your win, and they start hiring all your coaches. And then guess what happens? When that coach gets hired, guess what that coach is most likely to do? Take another couple of coaches that you might have promoted to their position. If you don't pay them more, they're going to pay that guy to come to the other team. Right. So, yeah, it can become pretty awkward pretty quickly.
Well, with 7 straight trips to the AFC title game, mm-hmm. speaking of the Chiefs, what will it take for the Bills, Bengals, and I mean, the Bengals did recently make a Super Bowl with Burrow not too long ago, but what do the Bills, Bengals, and Ravens have to do to finally get over the hump and take the torch from Kansas City?
Cincinnati needs to stay healthy and improve their defense. The Bills need to be better in their secondary and improve their coaching. The reason I say that is this. Anytime that a game is within 3 points, it's said that coaching made that outcome. We've seen the Bills play them as close as just about any other team, but rarely it's over the hump. As far as Baltimore is concerned, you can't choke in the playoffs. Like, you do all your damage during the regular season, and it's like, oh, wow, this is their year. It's happening right now. We're seeing the best player in the NFL. And then the carriage turns back into a pumpkin as soon as the playoffs starts, or around week 2 of the playoffs. And although the list may not be long as far as what needs to be done, it's not exactly the easiest thing to fix either for all of those team situations.
No, I think that's well said. I think for the Bengals, they really need 3 things to get over the hump. 1, they need to improve the defense dramatically that you alluded to. 2, they need to improve their offensive line so Burrow doesn't get stretchered every year. They need to keep him upright and healthy. He's got to be able to play all season. He can't get sacked and hit and knocked around like he does. 3, I've been saying this for a while. Zach Taylor needs to go. They need a new head coach. He's holding that team back. And so that would be, those 3 things are what the Bengals need. For the Bills, I think for them, it's really, it's better coaching late in games. You know, it's very telling to me that the Bills are 4-0 against the Chiefs in the regular season and 0-4 in the playoffs. So it's like you can beat them when it doesn't matter as much, but you can't beat them when it really matters. And to me, that I put that on coaching, because in the regular season, you've proven you can beat them, and it's a psychology thing, and they need to get over the hump, and the best way to do that is your coaching. I'm not sure. I've said this a while. McDermott's a really good coach, and he wins a lot of games. But I'm not convinced he's the guy that's going to get you to the promised land. And I think that when you keep falling short, at some point we have to address the elephant in the room, which is his inability to lead his team to win these big games. And I think that's just the reality of it. For the Ravens, it's as simple as Lamar needs to play regular season Lamar in the postseason.
Yeah.
You know, 10 touchdowns, 7 picks, 6 fumbles is not going to get it done in the postseason. That's just not good enough.
And as far as Buffalo is concerned, don't hear what we're not saying. If you were the Jaguars, if you were Chicago, if you were the Saints, the Jets, I could probably name about half the teams in the league that should go above and beyond and out of their way to have a coach of McDermott's caliber just to get you to relevance and in the postseason conversation here. That doesn't mean, however, that if your actual goal is a Super Bowl, that he's going to be the one to be able to get you there. The analogy I gave the other week is he's Moses and he got you to the promised land. He's just not going to be allowed to go into it. So at some point you have to, and just so we're on the same page, I'll say this. What he's doing with Buffalo is better than the vast majority of the league. So you don't bring in an experiment and hope that an experiment gets you over. You have to bring in a proven winner and have that proven winner get you over. And for a team like Buffalo, and I'm just being 100% honest, where they are every year may be good enough for that franchise. There are a lot of teams that just aren't going to win a Super Bowl anytime soon. But to have the success that they are having, you may not want to necessarily poo-poo if you're that front office.
No, agreed. No, absolutely agreed. So last but not least on the truth segment, we're going to have a little GOAT debate because I know this came up a little bit in the last show when I added a little wrinkle to one of my takes. I think it should be very clear to anyone who is on the fence that after the Super Bowl beatdown, that Tom Brady is very much in front for the quarterback GOAT. You know, 7 titles, 15 conference title appearances in 17 years. You know, because I know everyone wants to talk about, well, Mahomes in his first 7 years, and I know he didn't start year one. But, you know, 7 years to the conference title game, you know, 5 Super Bowl appearances, now 3-2. I'm going to make the argument. I want to get your thoughts. For me, it's very clear Brady's number one with 7 ring and the 15 out of 17 and all the other things. We could go on and on. The other thing is, while Brady has 3 losses in the Super Bowl, he never got blown out. The closest it came to it was the 28-3 Falcons game, which happened to be, by the way, the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history. So you can't even really count that because at the end of the day, it was the outcome that everyone remembered. Mm-hmm. Right. So you won. So, and you did it with 3 minutes to go in the third quarter and you mounted the comeback to get it done. So I say that to say that for me, I think the better debate is, has Mahomes caught and surpassed Montana is number 2. I think that's the more interesting debate. Not if Mahomes is anywhere near Brady, because I think he's got a long way to go, at least in my eyes. How do you view this?
Remind me, how many Super Bowls does Montana have?
4.
How many Super Bowls did he go to?
4.
How many Super Bowls does Patty have?
5.
No, how many does he have? Not how many has he been?
3. Yeah. He's 3-2. Yep.
And he's been to how many?
5.
BK, I'm going to say something that may be a little surprising here. And as I say this, BK, I'm saying this to you specifically. Do not hear. Please don't hear what I'm not saying. Don't do it. Okay?
It. We have a deal.
The argument for Jordan over LeBron is about to be the argument of Brady over Patty. The argument of Montana and Patty is about to be the Jordan versus LeBron. Even more apropos, because every time Montana got there, he won it, right? So if it's not about how many times you get there, it's about how many times you win and never losing when you get to the big game. So if you're going to use the Jordan argument against LeBron, you got to use that same argument for Montana against Patty. And honestly, it doesn't matter if he wins a couple more. Unless he gets 7 or 8, you'll still be able to use the Jordan argument to LeBron. Now, if he let's say he gets five, Montana got four. If he gets five, people will still say he didn't do it in the fashion that Montana did it. I would dare say he never had a Jerry Rice, and if he did, good Lord. So he did have Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill is not Jerry Rice. Just so we're on the same page. For those of you that are new to the game, Tyreek Hill is not Jerry Rice. So I can see that. I do believe he will usurp Montana at some point. As of today, for me, he's number three on the list, not number two. And it's going to take some doing for him to be number two, in my humble opinion. And this isn't old man get off my lawn talk. It's one guy went four times, won four times. You only have three, and you've been there five times. It's awesome that you've been there five times, but the fact that you got blown out twice, you got your back beat in twice. Like that's not a good look. Like it's, and here's the other piece of the puzzle, people. It's one thing to lose like LeBron did, and you didn't have the better team. That's one thing. But you got blown out. Now, I think the Eagles are honestly the better team. I don't think they have the better coach or the better quarterback, but the better team, I think the Eagles are the better team. But right. The first blowout that you experienced, everyone thought you were the better team. When LeBron got beat in the finals, he wasn't supposed to win. He didn't have the better team. Vegas told you going into the game that the team that's supposed to win is not his. Jordan never had a team that went into the finals that wasn't supposed to win per Vegas.
With one exception.
No.
In 91, their first trip, everyone was talking about how the Lakers were going to win.
I'm not talking about the public. I'm talking about Vegas.
They were the favorite to win that series.
But somebody got hurt, and it was a big player.
No, it just what happened in that series was, because I remember, obviously, you know, I'm a huge Bulls fan, and obviously they've been very not relevant for quite a while. But that being said, back in the glory days where it was fun to watch play, I remember before that series in this, you know, leading up to that finals of the summer where they're like, can Jordan, it's great that Jordan finally got to the finals. Can he actually win a title? Because the Lakers are going to get, the Lakers are the veteran team that are going to get him. And what became very obvious very quick in that series is the Lakers have got old and slow, and the Bulls were young and hungry, and they just took it to them. The only game that the Lakers won was game one. I think it took a Perkins three in the fourth quarter to steal that one, or they would have gotten swept. And it's like, so, but I remember that was, in going back to your LeBron thing, he was the underdog in most of the finals he was in, outside of his Miami days, where they were the favorite when they won the two rings, and they were the favorite when they lost to Dallas in the upset. You know, in the Miami days, he was the favorite all three times, but otherwise he was deemed the underdog.
Leave it to us to turn this NFL conversation to LeBron versus Jordan.
In fairness, folks, I got provoked.
Oh, Lord. But yeah, for me, he hasn't passed Montana yet. To circle back to the original question.
Yeah, and real quick, I agree. I mean, Brady's a very, very, very clear number one. Montana would be number two. 4-0 in the Super Bowls. The other thing, hasn't ever thrown a pick in the Super Bowl. You know? And like, so you're winning and you're performing great. Like, it's not like, and I know the Niners had loaded teams, but it's not like the Chiefs don't have a great team. They were going for a three-peat, so no one's feeling sorry for how bad the Chiefs are. They're doing just fine thing. So, yeah, I agree with you. I But one last question before we move on. You know, I'm going to turn this into a betting angle, and I'm going to see what I need to do to move you to this point.
Okay.
So Mahomes has 3 Super Bowl titles now. If I were to set the over-under for number of titles Super Bowl wins by the end of his career, now that he's 29, would you, if I said over-under 4.5, would you take over-under 4.5 titles?
Push. That half is killing me, BK. No.
Yeah. Because it makes you.
I think he can get 5, and the reason I think he can get 5 is he got to a Super Bowl when his best receiver wasn't playing. But here's the thing, too. Now, what happens when like Andy Reid isn't going to be around forever? He's not going to be around for the entirety of his career. So, who knows what? I mean, even Tom Brady went through a 10-year stretch where he didn't see another Super Bowl. So, nothing is given. And everybody isn't going to play as long as Tom Brady did. So if he happens to see that same sort of stretch, that could end up meaning that he only gets to one more Super Bowl to attempt to win before his career is over. So it's not a given.
So you think he'll go over, he'll get to 5. So let me stretch it one more.
No.
Over,
he
under.
He won't get 6.
Under 5.5.
Nope. He won't get 6. Under.
Okay.
He won't get 6.
I was trying to figure out where I needed to set this to get you to go over under. So now I know.
Yeah. Because, and the reason I said it is because by the time he gets his next one, however long that may take, I'm thinking 2 to 4 years, Andy Reid is going to be going after that one. And what Andy Reid brings to the table is invaluable. I really don't think that we really understand how important it is to have a coach of that caliber. And I don't know that they'll be able to just get over that quickly and be on a Super Bowl caliber level again. The way their team is currently constructed, I don't know with 100% certainty that they'll get to the Super Bowl in the next 2 or 3 years. I don't. I know they have Andy. I know they have Patty. Who knows how much longer Chris Jones will be around? Will he end up fulfilling his contract? Who knows if that O-line, if they'll be as lucky as they have been there. That O-line that was supposed to be a strength of your team got beat up on in the Super Bowl. So what are we going to do there? There's just a lot of things that are up in the air right now as far as Kansas City is concerned. In at no point in time in the very near future, or as long as Patrick Mahomes is their quarterback, do I believe that they won't be competitive. But getting all the way to the Super Bowl and winning it, that's neither here nor there. I don't see him getting to 6.
Agreed. Well, that wraps up our truth, but nothing but the truth. What's on deck for us, say?
Top 5. Motivating factors. I guess we'll start out with 5. For me, motivating factor, money. I'll put money at 5. Money isn't the end all to be all by any means, but it's how things that I do value more get taken care of, like security for my family. Being able to ensure that I can help others when others are in need. I got to be able to save myself from drowning before I can swim with someone else to the shore. So money is definitely a tool worth learning how to use, and a motivating factor and a compensating factor, if you will, pardon the pun. But 5 on my list is money.
I love it. For me, it's my 5 is personal growth. You know, just challenging myself to be better, basically to be better than you were yesterday. You know, we both, you know, hold the same position at work, and it's a message I give my team all the time is I ask for progress, not perfection. And I preach that to myself. None of us are perfect. Sometimes, no matter how much I try, I recognize in the pursuit of it, I won't ever get there. But I do, the progress is important. And so just trying to be better than I was yesterday, what am I doing to get better? So the personal growth for me would be number five. What you got for four?
Seeing others win. I'm not a hater in any sense of the word. When I see other people's get, when I see other people get theirs, the first thought that comes to my mind is, well, congratulations to you. And my turn will be coming up soon. If you, why not me? So seeing others succeed is a motivation to me.
I love it. My number four is what she said for five, which is money, right? You know, money is definitely a motivator. For me, the reason why it motivates is, you know, financial security is important. You know, being able to have the lifestyle and be able to prepare for the future and be prepared for the future takes planning and hard work, but it also takes money, and money is what gets you to those goals. So while it's by clear not the most important or anywhere near it, I think we both would be lying to say that it's not important in some capacity, because it definitely is a motivator.
Number three for me, I hate to lose more than I like to win. So my motivation, simply, I'm allergic to being a loser. It just don't sit right with me. And my youngest son, he had a playoff basketball game yesterday, and they ended up losing the game. And an hour and a half later, 2 hours later, I walk into my room, and my wife is sitting there rocking with him back and forth. And I'm like, let me just leave, because I get it and I don't. He has that same gene. I've learned how to deal with it over time, but I get it when you hate to lose more than you like to win, and you feel like you put in all the time and effort necessarily to win, and it doesn't work out that way, how you can be upset over it. While at the same time, you know how it is, BK. We as men, we gotta take it on the chin, keep it moving. But that was a mommy moment and not a daddy, you better quit crying, why do you need something to cry for a moment? So there was, because I get it. I just said, you know what? Let me walk this way. She got it. So, but yeah, I hate to lose more than I like to win.
No, I mean, that's definitely fair. For me, my number three goes back to what you said. I guess I'm one ahead or one behind, however you want to look at it. But for me, number three is helping others, right? One of the things that most motivates me about what we do at work, but specifically for me in this case, is I like seeing my employees reach their personal and professional dreams. I want them to get where they want to go. And you know, in the pickleball court, I love coaching and helping people and giving back and giving pointers to make people better. I enjoy that because if you care enough to want to get better and there's you in trust that I can help you do that, I'm going to give you 100% to do that. And it's very rewarding to see them succeed and them be happy and them have success. So that's my number three.
My number two, my boys. I have three boys, four children total. My daughter is my oldest. The reason why my boys are motivating factor, or one of my highest motivating factors, is because I, as a man, have to show them what is necessary in order for them to be able to take care of their family. What is necessary in order for them to be able to fulfill their mandates and the protection that they're supposed to have for their family. And in every way that comes in the factor, whether that be financial, emotional, spiritual, whatever it is, like ensuring that I continue to run the race so they can see what it looks like to cross the finish line is major in my heart of hearts as far as a motivating factor, because it's not that you can't win if you don't see it, but it's a lot easier to do it if you have a blueprint. So being that blueprint for my sons, that's huge motivating factor.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I love that. For me, going back again, one behind or ahead, for me, it's competitiveness and overcoming challenges. I did this when I was an agent where we worked. I do it on the pickleball court. And I need you, Zay, much like you gave me the little disclaimer earlier, I need you to not focus on the example I'm going to use and hear the message. So one of the things that I stole and emulated from Michael Jordan was he was the master of A, working hard, right? But B, using things people said to motivate him. You know, people would say, and if he couldn't, if people weren't saying anything bad about him, he would make it up to create that edge. And I love the fact that he was the first one in the gym and the last one to leave, and that competitive drive. And he's not the only one that's like that, Dan, he's not. But for me, I've emulated that, it, whether it be any kind of sports I play or work, I'll use people and things that they, I'll use things people say against them. I'll give you an example. When I won my first tournament that I ever entered in pickleball last summer, there were a couple people who had got back to me, much like work, everything comes back to you. And there were a couple people that talked trash about how they felt that I played easy competition and that I was better than where I was. And it, of course I won. It was so easy. Okay. First of all, not to sound like a coach, but winning is hard. I don't care what level you, it was my first ever tournament. I'd only been playing for 5 months at that, in a sport where most everyone competing had been playing a lot longer than that. Right. So
BK, I'm not gonna let you get away with that. You played tennis for like half of your life. And that's like just big chunk of the skill set. So it's not like you went out there fresh off of 5 months and was a beast. You're a beast from stuff that you started years ago. But I digress. Go ahead with your
hand. Allegation. Is my press secretary taught me to say no comment. However, you're not wrong. But that being said, but what I will say is that one of the people that made a comment who was rated far better than me, not a better player, but rated far better than me, according to the rating system, please know that when I played them, they were on the BK Bolton board. After they made that comment, they were 1-16. So just know that there are certain people, if you say things, you're on that list. Please don't be on that list. So, because I'm going back to the thing, I will use those things to motivate me to be great specifically in that situation. So, and that's something that Jordan used to do all the time, and he's not the only one, but competitiveness, like you said today, and you said it perfectly, we're great minds think alike. We both hate losing. We love winning. We hate losing. And let's be honest, winning is a lot of fun. Losing, not so much. So that's where we're at for number two. Close us out. What you got for number one?
Number one, my wife. My wife is, she's a queen. Like, she is truly a queen. She is the very definition of what just about any man that I know of would look for in a wife. You can't have all that success standing next to you and be a loser. That just ain't gonna quite work out right. Like I am never in competition with my wife, just so we're all on the same page, because she is my partner. So this is a cooperation, never a competition. While at the same time, I can't let her get but so much further than me before I'm like, hey. I know you're not going to slow down, so I need to speed up. Like, that's the, She is truly a motivating factor for me, like in so many different arenas in my life. I look at where she is and what she does and how she goes about conducting her daily business. And I say to myself, I wish like that's my Shiro. Like I wish I can do this, that, and the third as efficiently and effectively as she does. But to continually ensure that from day one until the last day that I am deserving of such a queen, I got to make sure I attempt to stay on my A game as well. So that's a huge motivating factor in, you know, the best of all outcomes, because whatever that outcome ends up being, as long as it's on the positive side, then that positively affects her as well. And she deserves every good thing in life that she can come across, or I can bring across her alleyway, if you will. So number one for me is definitely my wife. What you got number one, BK?
Well, I can't compete with your number one or number two, because those are way better than anything I have on my list. So, but for me, my number one is simply my standard is the standard. And what I mean by that is what that, you know, from a branding standpoint, you know, when I go out, when I'm at work and we compete for commission or we in rankings, or whether I'm on the pickleball court trying to kick your butt and crush souls while all smiling and doing it, I don't ever compare myself to my peers at work, and I don't compare myself to people on the pickleball court. I play to my own standard. And what does that mean? I'm going to always do my best and never give up. I give a maximum effort every day that I do it. I don't half-ass anything. Number two, I'm going to be honest. I'm going to have integrity. I'm going to treat people how I want to be treated. And I'm going to do everything I can to be great. And if I work hard and I'm consistent and give my max effort, then I trust and believe that the outcome is going to be what I want, because I can't control what anyone else does, whether it be at work or whether it be on the pickleball court. I can only control what I can control, which is me and the effort and the attitude that I have. And I think competing to that standard is what motivates me, because it's hard to be on your A game all the time. Life's, as they like to say, but it really happens. It's hard to want to be great all the time. You don't feel good. Something's going on personally for whatever the reason is, but it's really hard. So just being, keeping your own standard.
Well, BK, I want to be like you when I grow up, because I immediately compare myself to others. Like, it's some people that's, they ain't no way that I'm not better than you. I'm better than you, 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 and you. And I don't know about you. This will be a nice fight right here between me and you. But yeah, I immediately compare myself to others, especially in an environment that we're in, where if I'm not better than you, that means I get paid less. So I'm trying to be number one, number two, number three every single time. I need a place on the medal stand every single month, every single year, without exception. And that first starts with verifying who I'm better than, and then figuring out how I can be better than the ones that are ahead of me at the start of the race. But yeah, definitely understand where you're coming from. And that's a pillar of success, because when you get to a certain level, if you compare yourself to others, you'll find yourself being like one of those teams that only plays to the level of the competition versus being as good as you can be at everything you do every single time. So I definitely get where you're coming from. So, BK, we are now at the part of the show where you help us win money. BK's best bets. What we got this week?
So one of the things that we've learned throughout our almost year together now is that sometimes what is my main thing I always preach, say, it's that we're all about making money, right?
And every now and then, if there's not a best bet, don't force it.
Right.
Did I get that right?
Yes. The goal is to make money and be profitable, not throw money up in the air hoping it lands. So at this point, football season's done. The NBA, with all the variables, load management, injuries, trades, back-to-backs, 3-5.
All-star weekend coming up.
Are we going to be motivated, all that stuff? I don't bet on regular season NBA games. I think that's a foolish endeavor. So coming soon, we're going to have NCAA conference tournaments and March Madness, where you will get bombarded with plenty of BK best bets. But for this week, it's simply going to be no play, and we're just going to stash our money.
And sometimes no play is the best play. Listen to the pros, good people. With that being said, let's go ahead and go into our can't miss weekly rants. And BK, I'll start out this week, if that's okay with you.
You got it.
Fans, try not to be too fanatical. I know that's difficult to ask sometimes, but I need you to be able to separate sports and real life, okay? I need us not to make decisions over a sporting outcome that affects real life, whether it be the persons that are playing the sports, the people that are in the front office, whatever the case may be, okay? Philadelphia thing. You win a game and you tear up everything. I don't understand. You're fighting in the streets and carrying on like you just lost. I know Philly is different, so I'm not going to give you a pass, but I'll give you a mulligan. Do better next time, please. It's ridiculous. Dallas Mavericks fans, you're threatening a man's life for trading a player? What are you doing? What are you thinking? Do you realize that a lot of you internet tough people are putting yourself in a situation to where you might have to do real jail time for actually threatening a person's life? Like, please chill. Like, I understand being upset. I understand trades and transactions happening that you aren't on board with. It's not a life or death decision, good people. Fighting in the stands, fighting in the streets, fighting or putting your freedom at risk over anything involving sports is just not a very smart endeavor. So please do better. That's all I got, BK. Go ahead and round us up.
I love it. So you guys are going to get a much needed break for me complaining about officiating and replay and firing coaches. So coaches are safe this week. You guys can all breathe a sigh of relief. But on a serious note, this is less of a rant, but more of one of the things that I think you and I do a great job of, Zay, if I can give us credit for, is we try to get messages across above and beyond sports, more like life lessons and perspective and kind of reining in how people react to things or overreact to things, right? So with that in mind, life's too short, guys. I need you to stop the hate. Never take anyone or anything for granted. And remember, nothing is ever promise beyond today. It's with great sadness in my heart that one of my friends lost their son this morning in an awful accident. So I challenge all of you to keep this amazing family in your thoughts and prayers, to hug your kiddos even tighter, because as my parents have always said, outliving your children is every parent's worst nightmare. We complain about some of the most petty things. Line calls in pickleball, traffic moving too slow, the line is too long at the food truck. You know, like things at the end of the day that really don't matter. People lose friendships over political disagreements. At the end of the day, things like that, what happened to this family, that's what matters. I need us all to do better and focus on things that matter and stop complaining about stuff that at the end of the day just doesn't mean anything.
And that, my friends, is the truth. So make sure you guys tune in on next week. We won't have the midweek review. We will have this show yet again. And it'll be that way for a few weeks leading up to the NFL free agency and a few things that'll be happening there. We'll hop back into the fantasy football show as that happens. And then we will hop back to the weekly review show, going back from two shows a week to three shows a week, a little bit closer to the time that the football is kicking up. And we may actually do a few weekend review shows as the NBA playoffs kick into high gear and things of that nature. But if you go ahead and subscribe or follow right now, you won't have to worry about if you miss a show, because you'll be alerted every time there is a show. So that's going to be your best bet, since BK didn't have one. You see what I did there? So that'll round it out for us this week. And good people, remember, tell the truth.
And nothing but the truth.
Y'all be good.
Later, y'all.